The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
With me now to discuss matters domestic, Minister for Higher Education and Research, James Lawless. Minister, you're welcome to the show. Who are Fianna Fáil going to nominate for president?
So look, there. I suppose the party's in. First of all, good evening and great to be here in Wexford. It's actually my home county, despite being a proud Kildare representative. I was raised in County Wexford.
You're like Charlie Haughey, though, claiming you're from everywhere.
Exactly. Well, look, it worked out okay for him in the end. But so on matters presidential, indeed. So look, the party's in a great place. It is an early stage in the contest. Only one candidate is in the field that has a confirmed nomination. Other parties are going through Fine Gael, have a nomination process, Sinn Féin are still scratching their heads. You know, other parties are making up their mind. And we have a number of people, I think it's half a dozen at the last count, putting themselves forward as interested. And look, that's a really healthy position to be in. There was a time, you know, maybe it's harder to get candidates. The fact that people are competing with each other, it really says something about where we're at as a party. But ultimately, the presidency is about representing the country. It's about setting out a vision. It's about someone who can, engage internationally and represent the party abroad, but also who understands the role, the constitution, the checks and balances, and indeed can do the state some service at home as well. So look, of any of the names mentioned, look, there's many of them are fine candidates. It would be unfair of me to start endorsing one over another, but I look forward to the contest ahead.
Was there ever serious consideration given in the party to supporting Heather Humphreys?
So, look, in 2018, there was an agreed government candidate. That was Michael D. Higgins. It was slightly different because he was a sitting president. He had performed, you know, I think would be generally consensus. He had done a good job and did his job with distinction. But we're in a different space now. There is no sitting president. The outgoing Michael D. is stepping down after 14 years. And there's a vacancy. And I think all parties have an opportunity now to put their own flag bearer out there.
So and to have a contest. No consideration
not
given
to
Heather
Humphreys. I certainly wasn't involved in those conversations, and I'd be surprised if they passed me by.
Tell me about the €60 million supercomputer that you think the state should buy.
So I am in this job now about 6 months, and I have placed a significant emphasis on research and innovation. The key to Ireland's economic success for the last 40, 50 years has been the knowledge economy, our skill set, our talent, foreign direct investment, as well as Indigenous enterprise. And from O'Malley and free education through Sean Lamass and opening up the economy in Whittaker, that's been our blueprint. That's why we're so successful. We have so many of the world's top firms in pharma, in biotech, in life sciences, in internet technology, etc. here. The next wave by far is artificial intelligence, big data, high-performance computing. That's happening all over the world. Unfortunately, Ireland has fallen behind. We are one of the very few, if not the only, European Union member state that doesn't have what we call an AI antenna or AI factory. They are basically supercomputers that can do really significant computation, and it's a key part of our national infrastructure. If we're going to compete on the research and innovation agenda, and ultimately that's what drives our economy, we need to get real about getting the equipment in place. So this is the first of many moves I'll be making. I negotiated hard in the National Development Plan with Minister Chambers in July to secure $4.5 billion funding for capital projects. And the supercomputer is just one of many that I hope to bring forward over the next couple of years. And the goal of all this is to put in place the framework so that our researchers, our innovators, our private enterprise and our public sector have access to world-class computing facilities. And that's the blueprint of what we're going to do for the next 100 years.
And is the value in buying it as opposed to continuing to kind of rent it out, as it were, or rent time on one on the continent, that we have unlimited access, or is it a value for money argument?
So it's a bit of both, actually. And, you know, there's a few figures in the media today. Look, obviously, we'll go through a procurement process. We'll engage. We'll get a good bargain. I'm a big believer in having your own equipment and standing on your own 2 feet. We would be an outlier in Europe if we continue to not have that kit. There is a kind of rental model, but, you know, I even saw an academic today saying that halfway through the month they'd run out of space and they've got to, you know, beg and plead for to get it in, to wait till the next month to get in again. We were in that position with CERN, the European Particle Physics Laboratory, up until recently. Irish students and academics had to kind of go in the back door and look for favours and friends to get access. I signed up within a month of being appointed. I was in Geneva signing the dotted line for Ireland to join. I think it's really important we're part of that scientific technology collaborations, and I think it's important that we have the kit domestically available to us, because that is the next, you know, I'm going to talk tomorrow at the school about Ireland's third act. Our first act as a republic was independence, survival, finding our feet. The next wave or the next act was all about foreign direct investment, about, you know, our economic success based on education. Where's the third act going to be? I think it's going to be built upon research, innovation, indigenous enterprise, and driving the economy forward, which ultimately creates the public benefit as well.
It's kind of mad, though, isn't it, to be talking about, and I accept this kind of stray slightly outside your bailiwick, but talking about 60 million euro supercomputers in the third act of Ireland Inc., when the health system isn't even digitised. There's people listening to this maybe walking down to their appointment in Holla Street with a massive file under their arms.
Yeah, so that's why the health service got a much greater capital allocation than my department did in the National Development Plan last month. I would have liked more. Every minister wants to get as much as they can for their own department. I was quite happy with the sum I secured, 4.55 billion. But the health service was rightly allocated a much higher figure. And there is a programme for government commitment to digitalise the health service. I've long believed in a single unified view of the patient, be that a patient ID.
That's a cut and paste. I mean, previous programs for government have made commitments to digitize the health service. It's like Control C. New program for government.
That's a fair point. But I suppose it's backed up now by real money, and that money is in the National Development Plan, and there is a very significant allocation to health. But I will say as well, the likes of the supercomputer is exactly part of the infrastructure that will be used by health professionals, health informatics. So it's not a, you know, going to sit in a lab with under lock and key. It's going to be a national asset available across all the public system and indeed researchers in the private enterprise sector. And it's the kind of kit that we need to do exactly those kind of projects, digitalize our health services. And we talk about a digital estate now. So it's not just a health service, it's a big part of it. Everything that you need to do, that's the way we look at countries like Estonia, Lithuania, coming out of the Soviet Union. They actually are far more advanced now as a digital estate than other countries that have been around a lot longer.
Kind of a big week in terms of further education for a lot of the kids who are going on to further education after school, haven't got their Leaving Cert points, and then CAO offers for those who are lucky enough. What do you make, though, of a situation whereby somebody can get the maximum amount of points and not get a place in college because of the random selection? It would suggest that there's some level of dysfunction in the system.
Yeah, look, I mean, the first thing I'd say is I have absolute sympathy for any student that finds themselves in that situation. I mean, it's a nightmare for any student or parent that has worked so hard to actually achieve maximum points and then end up not being able to secure the course of choice. I suppose I will just contextualise a little bit by saying that of 1,400 courses, only 2% of them actually come down to random selection. And of those 2% of courses, it's only the last place in each course typically that comes down to that. The universities and the colleges are autonomous. I can't tell them what to do in terms of how they manage their intake. If any particular institution wants to increase the course size within their budgets, that's a choice that they can make. I can't direct them to do that. But I have engaged strongly with them since my appointment, encouraging them to optimize and increase course spaces, particularly in those high demand courses. So we have an extra 1,000 places on things like medicine, pharmacy, two more veterinary courses coming in next year, dentistry. They're all coming on stream, many of them this year, a couple more next year. And that's because we've invested in that. And I will continue to put pressure on the college to do that. And that will take some of the pressure off those high points courses. The other thing I'd say, and it's...
Is there an element of muddling through that the population bulge that's moving through the system? And actually, in a couple of years, some of these problems will rectify themselves.
There's certainly a bit of that, and there is a demographic bulge because we saw it coming through second level for the last couple of years. The population spike between 2007 to 2012 in terms of birth rates, that's now making its way through third level. So the predictions, the demographics tell us from now to about 2030, we will have a spike in third level, but it does begin to fall away again then as well. Having said that, if we look at courses like medicine, pharmacy, the couple I mentioned there, we do have an aging population, which is a good thing. And we talk a lot about lifespan, but really we need to talk about health span. So as well as living longer lives, can we be active and healthy for longer? Mm. And that's going to need a strong medical and allied healthcare resource pool to support that. So I think we're going to need doctors, nurses, physios, pharmacists for a long time to come, as well as our AI specialists, as well as our construction workers, as well as our many, many other diverse 1,400 different courses on the CEO, not forgetting our apprenticeships, our further education, our tertiary degrees, and so many other pathways through education.
What do you say to those people listening to this who have been excited to get their CAO offer and heading off to college but have nowhere to live?
Yeah, so look, accommodation is another priority for me. Again, I mentioned the National Development Plan allocation that I secured. I do intend to put a lot of that towards student accommodation. We have 100 million already allocated, and the first beds are coming on stream next week in Maynooth, 116 beds. UCD have 493 beds. And DCU have 400-odd beds.
Isn't the problem, though, sorry, Minister, but isn't the problem with citing these figures is that they sound impressive, and there's an awful lot more purpose-built student accommodation these days than there was several years ago, and nobody can deny that. That's just a statement of fact. But it's also true that there's an awful lot of foreign students in those accommodation units because the colleges rely on them for funding, because the state won't provide the funding they need.
So we have 50,000.
You're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul.
So we have 50,000 beds. You're right. We do have an awful lot more beds than historically was the case. There's 50,000 beds in purpose-built student accommodation. That's like student apartments, not even counting the flats or the houses in like some Maynooth or in Limerick or in Galway that students stay in. But it's 50,000 purpose-built student beds. Another 15,000 have planning permission. And I'm working through, and I'm working with Minister Brown on the, I suppose, the reset for housing for all. That will have a student accommodation, I suppose, chapter or very significant section. And I intend to publish a student accommodation strategy at the end of this year, which will guide for the next 5 to 10 years. And I really want
to... But it's part of that strategy that you actually fund the universities properly so that they don't need to import students from abroad, and that would free up some of the space.
Yeah. So yes and yes. So first of all, funding the universities properly. So one of the other things I've done in my 6 months in office, I've got cabinet approval to bring the National Training Fund through, which will unlock 150 million per annum for the universities. The Funding the Future report started by Peter Castles that was around for a number of years. I'm finally doing that. That's been talked about for a decade. I'm doing it now. I hope to bring that legislation before the Dáil as soon as we go back in September. And that will actually plug that core funding gap, which I totally agree has been an issue historically. And I want to be the minister that actually fixes that and gets that done. Going back to the student accommodation piece, it's also important, and I've been looking at this with my team, that we ring fence some of that accommodation. That I understand universities have students from abroad, and there's many Indian, Chinese, US traditionally would be the top three nationalities coming in. But we need to ring fence a lot of that accommodation for local students that want to attend the local university. You know, so that is something we need to put into the mix with the student accommodation as well.
Minister for Higher Education and Research, James Lawless. Minister, thanks a million for joining us here on the show.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.